G'day everyone, you're tuned to Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and you're listening to episode number 20. We're talking about how technology is changing music education, and my special guest today is Simon Rushby. Now, before we get into the episode, I do want to have a quick thank you and shout out to my sponsor, which is the exam board ABRSM, and they have some of the coolest apps out on the market for music teachers, a number of which I've used and can highly recommend. Did you know that they have an app called Speed Shifter, which allows you to slow down and loop any piece of music? This is great if you have students working with backing tracks, for example. They also have the award-winning Aural Trainer app, which I've mentioned in the last couple of episodes, and is now available for grades 1 to 5 and 6 to 8. And if your students are working on any ABRSM repertoire, they should definitely check out the Piano Practice Partner to make practice more fun and engaging. You can check out all those apps today by heading to abrsm.org/apps. Now, my guest today, Simon Rushby, is a music educator from England. He heads up a music department at a school over there, and he's a piano teacher by trade and background as well. So this guy, you know, had just so many great ideas to share with everyone, and it was really fun just talking more generally about technology. So we do go into a number of apps and the specifics of using technology in music education, but we also talk more generally about how technology is impacting on education in a more general sense, in classrooms, in instrumental studios, and all sorts of ways. So we discuss aspects of using technology in studios. We talk about how it can be difficult to actually change and use some of these new technologies. But he also gives us some, you know, step-by-step ways to make a start if you are a little bit on the edge when it comes to using technology. Now, you know, it's a topic close to my heart, so it was great fun to discuss. And you can find all the information at the show notes page, which is timtopham.com/episode 20. Look, it's so great to have you listening or watching wherever you are in the world. I do appreciate it. There's plenty of ways that you could be spending your time, and I do appreciate that you've chosen to spend it with me on this podcast. So I hope that you're getting lots out of it. And please, if you are enjoying this series, it would mean a lot to me if you are able to head over to iTunes and leave a review. It does help in rankings, and it also is just fantastic to read. Often I'm sitting here at the mic or having a conversation with someone in front of the camera, and if you don't hear very much back, it can be hard to kind of judge what's going on. So please do leave a review. It means a lot to me. And also, if you're interested in hearing about something in particular, or you've got an idea of someone who I should interview, then please send me an email. You can contact me very easily through my website. Go up to the About menu and then to Contact. If you'd like to leave a review, you can head to timtopham.com/iTunes, and all the instructions are there. It takes all of about 3 to 5 minutes, depending on how long it will take you to type it in. So with that, I'll move on and let the interview roll. I do hope you enjoy this interview and discussion with Simon Rushby. Well, good morning, or good evening, actually, Simon. How are you going? Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Tim. I'm fine. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
It's always a little bit confusing when we talk to people across the other side of the world. It's sort of 6:30 a.m. here and I think 8:30 p.m. there. But look, thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving me your time tonight. I'm really looking forward to having a bit of a chat. And tonight we're just kind of talking about music technology in a general sense, and then looking at a few apps, particularly as related to the ABRSM, which is an organisation that you're associated with. So before we get started, can you just tell us what your day-to-day role in music education looks like at the moment?
Sure. Well, I'm a music teacher in a school, so my role in school is a head of music. So I head up a music department of six full-time classroom teachers who also do a lot of extracurricular music, sort of conducting choirs and so on and so forth, as well as teaching classroom music. And then we've got 26 visiting music teachers who come in to the school and teach all the different instruments. I teach a lot in the classroom for GCSE and A-level, which are our two big bands of music academic examinations. And then I also teach a little bit of piano. I teach composition and I take ensembles and choirs. And then that's the main job. And then part-time, I'm the ABRSM examiner. Also an examiner for composition, and I do a bit of writing and a bit of presenting as well.
Well, sorry, I'm quite busy. Yeah, I can imagine that makes it even more special to have you on the show.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you for getting up so early for me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Look, it sounds like you must be absolutely flat chat day to day. What kind of school is it? What size? Co-ed, single sex, private, public?
It's an independent co-ed secondary school. Right. So the children are 11 to 18 years old, but we have a junior school attached to us as well, which I sometimes work in. But most of the time it's boys and girls, 11 to 18, and it's a private school.
Yep, great.
Yep, about 950 pupils altogether.
Right. It was right at the start of my career that I spent a year over at Oundle School in Peterborough. Yeah, that was one of my first ever teaching jobs, actually. Great, I had a great time over there. It was fantastic.
So I would say the school I'm at isn't much different. It's Reigate Grammar School. It belongs to the same sort of club as Oundle, the same association of schools. So it's quite similar in lots of ways. But Oundle is boarding. We're a day school.
Right, okay. But I can I know that the GCSE and those kind of things, so they're the final three or four years of exams, aren't they? At two different
levels.
That's right. Yeah, great.
Yeah, they take GCSEs at 16 and A levels at 18.
Right. All right. So we're talking about technology today. How do you feel technology has impacted the day-to-day interactions you have with students and the lessons that they have, perhaps not even just directly your ones, but the ones that your staff have with their students as well in the music area?
I think the biggest impact that technology has is helping students to help themselves. So that's become it's allowed students to take a lot more sort of responsibility for their own learning and their own progress, and it helps them to get on at their own speed as well. So in a classroom situation, that's got gilt edged really, because it means that. Particularly in music, where you've got kids that are very experienced sitting next to kids that have a little experience, they can move along at their own speed using technology. They can go at their own pace. It's brilliant for flipped learning, which is where you sort of provide the resources for them to look at in their own time, and then you use what they've learned from those resources in the classroom. So it gets us out of standing at the front and talking to them too much, which is boring for them. And it means they can be much more hands-on in the classroom, because a lot of the kind of didactic, boring stuff has happened in their own time. For example, if we've asked them to watch a video or to do some research online. It's brilliant for composition. It's a great aid for composing, for example, using GarageBand or Logic or Sibelius. And it's brilliant for performers as well, particularly singers who want tracks made, sort of music minus one type tracks where parts are taken out that they can play to. What else? Ease of finding resources, I suppose, and interactive lessons in the classroom, like quizzes. There's a site called Kahoot, which is brilliant for doing quizzes with them in class, where they can use their iPads to select the answer, and there's little sort of competitions and so on going on.
Actually, so it's great. I've just found out about this Kahoot thing, and I'll actually have to blog about it, because we were playing it in our staff room the other day, and it was really good fun. For those of you who haven't seen it, the website comes up, and you can put this at the front of a classroom or a small group if you do group piano, and each student pretty much selects their answer on their phone or their iPad instead of having a buzzer sort of thing, and it was really good fun, and it brings up scores. And I thought, yeah, that would be great if I was teaching classroom again.
Theory apps are great as well. Theory sites and theory apps in the classroom, or as a piano teacher, being able to set little chunks of work that they could do using an app or online to help support their performing work that's to do with learning the theory behind it. There's a lot of really good apps out there that I'll talk about later on that make it interesting as well, because when you say theory to a student, you generally get them switching off almost straight away. So it needs to be dressed up.
Absolutely. And look, before we dive too deeply too, I think there's a good chance there'll be some teachers listening who are like, oh, here we go again, more technology talk. I'm struggling to keep up with I've just bought my iPad. I've got one app, and I'm doing okay. Like I'm just trying my best. It can be so overwhelming, this whole technology thing. And I know some teachers are actually resisting it probably, and just kind of it's just easier to stick with what you know, rather than try and learn a whole lot of new stuff. Because I think if you're not using apps or technology in your teaching, it can seem like a massive mountain to climb. So what would you say to teachers who are perhaps a bit resistant to change when it comes to technology?
Absolutely. I would agree. And I think the worst scenario is technology for its own sake. It's no use using technology unless it really does support what you do. And it's not, the other thing is, it's not replace what you do, but support what you do. That's really important too. The tried and tested methods that we've all used for years and years and years are often the best methods. And so technology has to be useful and has to support all of that. Look, I started teaching in 1990, given my age away here, when hardly anybody had a computer. Mobile phones looked like bricks, and I took a long time, I think myself, to come around to it. And I've definitely got staff now, particularly visiting staff, who, you know, you talk to them about communicating via email, and they put a face, you know, so they really don't want to buy into it. Two things I'd say. Number one, don't be scared of it. I think technology should aid teaching. It should be used to back up successful teaching methods. It shouldn't be used to replace them. You can't be left behind. There's, to be honest, we're all behind the whole time. Technology moves so fast that being scared of being left behind is pointless, because we all will be. But everyone needs to move at their own speed and find the best technology that supports us the best way, and just use that and learn from others and do a little bit here and there. But not to dive in completely and try and change everything that you do, because I don't think that's the right way. The second thing I'd say is there's a reason why everybody's talking about technology, and that's because it's completely taken over our lives. It plays a huge part in our lives now, especially young people. And, of course, a lot of teachers teach young people. I'm sure you've got plenty of people watching who teach adults, but vast majority probably of the people we're talking about when we're teaching are youngsters. So ahead of our chat today, I did a little bit of research about the use of technology in Australia. Okay. And I found some interesting stats that were gathered by the Australian Communications and Media Authority about a year ago. Right. Did you know, for example, nearly all 8 to 11-year-olds access the internet in Australia on computers, iPads, iPods, or game consoles? It's about 94%, something like that.
It does.
Access the internet. 51%, it says here, of 10 to 11-year-olds have accessed it via a handheld device like a smartphone. 67% of 12 to 13-year-olds own a mobile phone in Australia. And 45% of 8 to 11-year-olds use social networking sites. One of the top ones is YouTube, bearing in mind that Facebook have a 13-year-old minimum age. But still, there are plenty younger than that that use it, and similar sites as well. So it's a bit worrying in a way. You know, I'm a parent. I've got two teenagers myself, and you know, I think it is worrying that they spend so much time online. And the role of a parent is very much to limit that and to restrict it and to make it positive. But as teachers, we can harness some of this online time positively and educationally. Then we're doing them a favour as well as us. And we're probably doing their parents a favour too.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, those stats, they don't surprise me. There's quite regular articles in the paper about, you know, how we're addicted to our screens and what that's doing to children. And in fact, I was writing the other day on my site about how technology is impacting the lives of children and all of us. You know, it's one of those things that we can't ignore. We're immersed in it, and it's just a matter of working out the best ways to use it. I'm wondering too, is over here there's a pretty strong agreement that students don't use phones in class time. Is that the same over there too?
It varies from school to school. So some schools have a complete ban on use of phones in school. Some ban it in class time. Others encourage it. So different schools have different views. In my school, we encourage it, but we allow it, and we sometimes incorporate the use of phones in our lessons. Doing some trials at the moment. We're not likely to become an iPad school. Some schools are, but we're doing some trials with things like iPads and other tablets to see how they can aid learning. One thing's for sure, it splits people right down the middle. Because there's no doubt that phones and tablets can be really useful, but there's also no doubt that they can be abused, and that we should be really careful about what we're bringing up our young people to be like. Because, I'm of a certain age where I grew up with nothing like that, no technology. Did have a computer when I had a ZX Spectrum when I was sort of 15.
I'm not even sure what that is.
Well, exactly. There you go. It was good enough to be able to play kind of one of those games with the bars, knocking the little square ball back.
Yep.
And that was about it, really.
Yeah.
But it was just, these days, my daughter, who's 15, spends, if we let her, nearly all her time looking at a screen.
Yeah.
It's their window on the world. And it's their social life, and it's everything to them. So it certainly splits people, that's for sure.
I must say, I encourage my students to bring phones to lessons. Our school is a little bit in the middle, like you said. I think their phones are discouraged, but no one really takes much notice of it. Most students will have phones on them. I definitely say, look, bring your phone in, because it's quite often that I'll say, okay, let's just do a video of that hand position or how to play this, or me just telling you your instructions for the week or whatever it is. It's just such a quick way to do that kind of thing. So
I do that too. For example, if a student's got an idea in composition, but they don't necessarily have the theory skills to write it down, I say, well, just sing it into your phone or play it into your phone and let's hear it. And that's really enabling for them. A few years ago, they almost got stuck before they got started because the creativity was stifled by a lack of being able to pass it on.
Yeah. And that could be a great way for people if you really are struggling to get started with technology in piano lessons, just use the video or the microphone kind of aspect of a device.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be yours. Your students will have one. You can so easily just pop it up on the piano and record something. So there's a good little starter, I guess. I just want to go back to a couple of things you mentioned early on when you were talking about things that have how technology's helped what you do. You mentioned two things. One is flipping the classroom kind of idea, and composition. So just on the flipping, how would you see this working for piano teaching? Perhaps have you got any ideas of things that you do? And just perhaps if you could just kind of just go over what the flipping idea means for teachers.
Yeah, sure. Well, the idea of flipping is to give the students a responsibility to learn rather than in a sort of active way in their own time and at their own speed, and often when they're not with you, so that you've got time to do new stuff with them and for your work with them. If you're teaching piano, it may be a half hour slot that you've got with them. You don't want to spend too much time, as I'm sure many piano teachers do, and I certainly do, going over stuff that you've gone over before, or helping them, read through the music, almost helping them learn the pieces, for example. Or you want to teach them new stuff, and you want to add value to what they're doing. And the idea of flipping is that you could record little video snippets of things that you find yourself saying a lot that you could just have in a sort of online resource somewhere that they could look at, like a YouTube account that they could look at, which could be half a minute or 1 minute or 2 minute things that you've recorded on your mobile phone about some aspect of technique, or this is how a D major scale is constructed. Here is the fingering for such and such a scale. Here are my top tips for sight reading. And then you can set them work. After the lesson, you can write in their notebook, look at my YouTube channel, look at this or that, and take some of that in, And you're teaching them remotely then, and you know, it's not even your time, it's their time. I use flipping a lot in school for basic things that we've gone over before, sort of foundation stuff, that if I had to go over again in class, it would hold the whole class up. So for example, sir, I can't remember how to do this in Sibelius. So my team and I have made a whole load of little self-help videos for the basics in using the program Sibelius. So that students can remind themselves of what they're doing. So that's really flipping in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, such an achievable thing for most teachers. I'm sure if people search my archive, we might even try and pop it in the show notes, a link to my article about setting up a YouTube channel and creating playlists and things like that. I've got some information there. So it's not too difficult. And if you've got a phone and can record video, it's really easy to get it onto YouTube too. So just,
A lot of it is the confidence. Yeah, absolutely. Don't be scared. It's because recording yourself and then putting it online is a massive leap if you've never done it before. But there are all sorts of ways to sort of protect yourself, if you like, to make the site private. There's a whole load of sort of safeguarding things that you need to be really sure of, you know, what you're doing as well, in terms of getting, for example, young students to watch videos that you've made. But it feels like a bigger minefield than it is. And I think just trying to pull out and see what they look like, and you might make a real fool of yourself, but that's how we all get started.
Exactly. Yep. I've done some really bad videos. That's what you know. The second one I wanted to pick up on is you mentioned composition too, and I'm a big one for creativity in lessons and using apps to inspire some composition and improv. You mentioned a couple of things that you use, and we might talk about them later, but GarageBand was one of them. So that's an app, and it's also software for Macintosh, Mac computers.
That's right.
And Sibelius, which is more the notation side. Is there anything else that comes to the forefront of your mind that you use with regard to composition?
Yeah, well, I also use Logic, which is actually an industry standard. It's used in recording studios. It's a bit like GarageBand Plus.
Okay.
It allows you to construct music either using sort of new stuff that you come up with yourself that you can play in, because it takes audio, so you can play it on a guitar or sing it in or play it using a keyboard. It's also got thousands and thousands of loops, which are pre-recorded things that you can use and put together to make your own kind of musical collages. That's Macintosh as well. There are equivalents for PC. The leading one probably is Cubase. Mm-hmm. And there's a light version of that, which is quite affordable as well, which does the same sort of thing as Logic, but is a PC-based bit of software. I think one thing I'd like to say at this point is, again, and we say this to the kids a lot, computer software should be there, or computer apps should be there to help you and support you in composing. They shouldn't be doing it for you. There's still nothing to beat sitting at a piano or holding a guitar and working some stuff out. And doing that, one of the things we make our students do quite early on when they're learning composition is to write for their own instrument by literally going into the room with their instrument, even if it's a flute, and just writing a solo piece for flute, unaccompanied piece for flute, and just trying stuff out, because that's what they know best. And then actually, that's where, again, using your phone to record yourself, just trying ideas out is often the best way to get started.
And would you tend for piano, would you tend to make that a chord-based activity like you probably would on guitar?
I would say try writing melodies first, maybe pentatonic ones. With young students who haven't really got very much musical experience, we do black note melody composition.
Always good fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you only use the notes, and you can make, it's almost fail-safe, you can make a great melody. So through that, we can teach melodic structure, things like AABA melodies and so on, very easily to quite young kids. And they get instant results, which they can play themselves as well. So they get really excited about that. Chord-based compositions, yeah, I think learning the basics of triads and so on, so that you can underpin your melodies is brilliant as well. In the early days, working with a partner is a good way of doing that, and just one person playing some simple chords, usually chords 1, 4, and 5, and then someone else writing a simple melody to go over the top, and then swapping roles, so you both get a chance to do that. It's pretty quick to get to results, and it's always really rewarding for them.
Mm. And if anyone's unsure about pentatonic scales, then my very first podcast episode with Daniel McFarlane, we talked about improvising, and he talked a fair bit about pentatonic scales. So that's episode 1 in the podcast library. Okay.
Perfect.
Good question for you here. Can you tell us a time when technology has really caused a breakthrough for a student or a group of students that you've been teaching?
Yeah, I can think of a couple of things actually. Using GarageBand has allowed students with great creativity but limited musical experience to write some amazing stuff. And I remember a student who had no ability to play an instrument at all, but was a brilliant singer, just a bedroom singer, bathroom singer, whatever you want to call it. But she had a lovely voice, no training whatsoever. And I showed her how to record herself using a GarageBand. She went away for half an hour during the lesson to play with it. And by the end, she'd come up with a beautiful a cappella sort of three-part thing that she just made just like that. You know, she said,
harmonizing with herself.
Yeah. And she knew how to do it. And she'd obviously done an awful lot of singing along with other stuff and come up with ideas. So it was lovely to see. I can't think of another way that she would have been able to have shown us that ability that she had embedded in her. You know, it wasn't even something she'd been taught. Mm. So that was...
And go back, even 10 years, and she would have had to have done that in a recording studio. Now we can do it on an iPad. Isn't that amazing?
I used to do it with 2 tape recorders.
Yeah.
So I'd record myself with one, and then I'd play that one and try and sing over that. And by the end, you ended up with more hiss than music. But
yeah,
it was... It's fantastic. So that was terrific. The oral trainers, the apps that ABRSM have brought out have been brilliant in helping students to help themselves in preparing for oral and practicing their oral in between lessons. Oral is often something that you don't have time for. You squeeze it in at the end of a half-hour lesson or a 40-minute lesson.
Everyone puts their hand up for that.
Yeah, absolutely, and probably the same for sight reading too. Mm. And there's a couple of really good sight reading apps as well. So again, I think the ABRSM oral apps, I've been telling all our students to get them, and it's had a noticeable effect on their performances in oral, and just their general ear training has gone up because they can work at their own speed. They can try stuff over and over again. So that's been brilliant.
Mm, good. And we might talk about that just a little bit later on. All right. They're the good times. What about a big, fat fail?
give us
a time when technology just has been a disaster for you. Could be in your teaching or you personally with your own music or something like that.
The problem with using computers to write is when the whole storage side of things fails on you. And this happened to me quite a long time, quite early. Quite early in the sort of technological part of my career. At one school I was at, we had Atari ST computers running Cubase software. So this is before PCs.
I remember Atari.
Good. I'm talking your language now. I felt very old. Said you'd never heard of a ZX Spectrum.
No, anyway. I've heard of this one.
I was working with a student sitting at a computer who was doing this lovely bit of composition, and we were working together for quite some time, and then I'd go away and work someone else and I'd come back, and he'd made great progress, and neither of us had thought to save the work for quite some time. Now I'm saying save, and most of these programs have auto save on them now. So I sort of did this, sort of leant back sitting next to him, my feet came up under the desk, and I cut the power to the computer with my toes. And the screen went dark, and we looked at each other, and an hour or more of really good work had gone. And you learn from things like that, you know. That's a fail that I've had.
How ironic that it was just at that moment that you were relaxing back, pleased with yourself. finished your work. Oh, you poor thing. Yeah, I think we've all had those moments. And still, I get caught by it sometimes. I'll forget to say something. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, power cuts and things like that. We always do sort of file tidying at school, you know, because we have so many files on our system. So every now and then we sort of package them up and compress them and stick them somewhere. And we do have the occasional moment when a student goes, oh, where's my work gone? It takes us a bit to find it because we can't, you know, it didn't quite get put in the right compartment or whatever. So that sort of stuff is a bit of a minefield. The other thing that I think we all need to be careful about is online, just seriously really, is online safety and just what we're asking our students to look at, just make sure we've tested it ourselves. Mm-hmm. For example, if you point students at YouTube, of course the comments on YouTube are unregulated. And on a lot of videos, there are comments that aren't suitable for young people to look at. So I think a massive piece of advice to all teachers that are using technology, online technology, is check it first before you recommend it and before you send a student off to sort of look at things online that you want them to look at, because some of it might link to advertising or comments or language or whatever that's not appropriate for them to see.
Yeah, great piece of advice, Simon. Thank you for reminding us all of that. We all need to remember that. Okay, so let's talk a bit more specifically about a few apps then. Can you give me, I don't know, your top five or something like that, applications that you use?
Absolutely. I love the ABRSM apps and I work for them, so you're very kindly going to allow me to talk about those a little bit later.
Yeah.
So, sort of aside of those, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, I made a little list of some of my favourite ones.
Great.
There's a really good app called Note Perfect. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's theory games for children. So it's a great one for really young students who've just started, who you want to sort of introduce theory to them in a sort of fun way. And it gives you little sort of little games. It gives notes sort of names and characters and so on, and it helps them to learn. So I really like that one. It's a great
iPad. Good for what kind of ages?
I would say that's sort of 6-year-olds to 10-year-olds.
Great.
Sort of age probably.
Mm,
there's a really good one called Ear Trainer, which is great for improving your musical ear. It has lots of exercises and tasks and information about chords, about intervals, about scales, about relative pitch, you know, help you to improve your relative pitch. And it has a playable keyboard built into it as well. So it's very interactive.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that app.
These are iPad apps, aren't they?
They are, but a lot of them are Android as well now.
Okay,
I'm not sure about Ear Trainer. I think it might now be Android too. I've just recently switched to an Android phone, actually, having been an iPhone user for years and years and years.
Oh, really? That's controversial.
Well, I couldn't afford an iPhone 6 and I wanted a bigger screen, so so I've gone for a Samsung. And so it's been a bit of a sea change for me, switching over to Android. I've still got an iPad and a Mac, but I have an Android phone. And it's been really good for me, actually, because I've been a bit of a Mac geek up to now, and you know, as soon as I start talking about that, anyone who's not into iOS and iPhones and things switch off. So I tend to check that apps that I talk about can be found on Android as well.
That's great.
We've mentioned GarageBand. I put that in my top five, definitely.
Okay.
They brought that out as an app recently, and it's fantastic. There are others that are like it. There's one called MadPad. There's another one called Everyday Looper, I think it's called. Yes, Everyday Looper. There's another one called GrooveMaker, and they all do very similar things. They allow the user to sort of put together loops and ideas and construct music from them. And they can put in their own, they can record their own ideas and use them as well.
That's great.
If you've got students,
I'm making notes myself. It's fantastic. Brilliant. Keep going.
if you've got students who are into Ed Sheeran, when most of us have now. He's big in Australia too, is he, Ed Sheeran?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's huge over here. And one of the big things that he does is loops his own backings when he plays live. So he just plays ideas with his guitar and loops them and then builds up textures uses percussion on his guitar and builds up rhythms. Certainly the kids that I teach love watching him do that and always marvel at what he can. He makes a band. He doesn't actually tour with a band. He just plays the guitar and that's all he does. And these apps do that same sort of thing. They allow you to build up sort of collages of different loops, and that's really great because it improves your ensemble skills as well as your creativity, because you have to listen and play along with things.
I'm already you've got me thinking about how I can use this as a creative tool myself, because I've got a couple of these apps, but I actually haven't spent the time trying to use them. So I'm going to do that, and I'll share my results with everyone, because that's I can see how much fun that's going to be. In fact, I remember one of these apps was used on The Late Show or something with Billy Joel. Do you remember? Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't. I can imagine it was amazing.
Yeah. I think it was Billy Joel was being interviewed, and he got out this looper and just put in. I'll try and find the clip and I'll put it in the show notes. We'll see, because it is a very cool idea.
I'll look out for that. I love Billy Joel, my favorite artists. There's just one more I was going to mention, and it's Fourscore. And this is an app that allows you to store on your tablet, and I know this is definitely cross-platform, scores, hundreds of thousands of scores. Either your own scores, which you can scan in, or PDFs that you've downloaded, or it comes with its own library of scores as well. So it's like all your sheet music library in one iPad, and it's very, very user friendly. You stick it on the piano, on the stand on the piano. You can get a pedal for it if you want to turn the page, or you just touch the screen and the page turns. It's got lots of inbuilt features, like, for example, edit features, so that you can actually use your finger or a pen, a stylus, to write on it. You can have a metronome going. I think it's fantastic, Fourscore. I use it all the time. And I'm a gigging musician as well. I do a lot of playing in bands and so on. And I've got all my charts on there, which is great if you go to a gig and someone says, oh, do you know this song? And you think, well, I've played it once before, so I can look it up and remind myself of the charts for it, or whatever notes I've written down for it. So Fourscore is brilliant. I think for all teachers, it's a great resource.
Yep, I agree. It was the first one I got, and I regularly tell people about Fourscore. It's just the standard. There's no point getting any other one, I don't think, in my opinion anyway.
There are others.
Yeah. No, it is brilliant. Yeah. We'll put links to all those apps. So great recommendations. Thank you. I'm going to explore. There's a number that I haven't heard of myself, so I'll definitely check them out. Thank you for that. Let's talk about some of the ABRSM apps. I think they've got about 4 or 5 now, which is fantastic, because we don't normally associate exam boards with app technology. What they're doing is really, really good, because, as you say, one of those hard things is actually finding the time in your lessons to support students to do these oral tests and things. So how great is it that the exam boards come out and said, well, here's an app, get your students to use that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are, I think you're absolutely right, and ABRSM takes very seriously their role in music education to support teachers and support students to prepare for the exam. So certainly in recent years, they've shifted their focus, not away from, but sort of to run parallel to the end product of the exam, which is always what ABRSM is known for, to actually all these fantastic resources that are available, a lot of them free or very cheap as well. The Speed Shifter was the first one, I think, and ABRSM Speed Shifter is great for practice. So if you can get students to get comfortable with it and get comfortable with it yourself, then you'll find that their practicing just becomes so much more well used. You know, the time that they spend practicing is so much more well used. Again, like all these things, it can't replace what they would normally be expected to do away from technology, but it can certainly support it.
So what does Speed Shifter do?
Well, Speed Shifter allows you to vary the speed of any MP3 or CD file that you care to put onto your computer, which means, of course, that you can play, if you're a flute teacher or a violin teacher, for example, you can have the accompaniments play at different speeds while you're learning the main part, and it doesn't affect the pitch. You know, if you slow something down, the pitch goes down as well. You can set the speed to any speed you like, either using a sort of wheel, a metronome wheel, or you can just tap the speed that you want and it will learn that. It also allows you to have loop points. So you can, if you're practicing sort of 4 or 5 bars, you can have it loop round and round and you can practice while it loops. You can have pitch change, so you can make it transpose as well. It will work with pretty much any MP3 that you sort of show to it. It does come with a lot of ABRSM recordings of accompaniments and so on. But it's, a lot of your viewers will remember Music Minus One and all those sort of tapes and of backings for this piece and that piece and the other. And it's like that, but you've actually got control of it.
Yeah.
So it puts the ball back in your court in terms of the speed you want to go at and the bits that you want to focus on. Speed Shifter is a very clever bit of technology, and I have no idea how they managed it, but it's really useful.
It's great. And I don't know about you, but I'm finding that students, like I always encourage students to use backing tracks if they're learning, particularly if they're beginners and they're playing very simple one-note melodies. It's like, learn the melody, put the backing track on. It's going to be much more fun. But a lot of them don't do it anymore because no one has CDs to play, or it's just too hard to plug something in that's going to play the music. I've heard that Piano Adventures has started releasing an app with its backing tracks on it, and I think that's going to be the way to go for that sort of thing. Yeah. If you're a teacher that likes using those.
Yeah, absolutely. Scales too. There are backing tracks online now for scale practice. That make playing scales more interesting. That's going to be an absolute godsend for teachers and trying to getting students to practice scales.
Yeah. Have you got any links to ones that you like using?
I will try to find some for you to put up.
That would be great.
There are good ones and not so good ones. I'll have a good look around at some of the ones, and I'll ask some of my colleagues at school as well what they've been using. My office is below the saxophone teacher's room, and I hear an awful lot of extremely jazzed up saxophone scale accompaniments coming through the ceiling. Yeah. They're really cool. They're really funky, and I'm sure the students love it. And it makes it so much more pleasurable practicing scales.
Great. So what about the other apps?
So we've got Oral Trainer, which I mentioned earlier. ABRSM have just brought out the new one for grades 6 to 8. The grades 1 to 5 ones have been around for a while. And Oral Trainer is set out like oral in the exam, so it's structured like the oral tests will be for various grades in ABRSM exams. But it allows you to repeat exercises, to try practice ones, to grade your progress and sort of follow your progress on a chart. It gives you progress reports, it gives you feedback, it gives you sample responses. So I was trying out the grade 6 one yesterday, actually. I was staying in a hotel somewhere and I was singing away. So I realized I was singing a bit too loud and the person in the next door room could hear me. I was trying singing the top line back when it's played to you as a two-part or a three-part thing. And it gives you loads and loads of opportunities to practice and to improve there. And it records you, so you can then hear back what you did and compare it with what was, and it shows you the printed music, so you can compare it with what was played and so on.
You sing, it records you and notates you and puts the two on top of each other?
It doesn't notate you, I don't think, but it shows you the correct notation.
Right.
So, for the higher grades, you would be able, as a student, you'd probably be able to see where you went wrong if you listened to your singing and followed the notation. Oh, I went up there and the music went down.
Yep.
So it gives you lots of feedback like that. It even gives you a mock exam as well at the end of the whole sort of process. So I think Oral Trainer is brilliant for supporting teachers who have precious time, little time for oral. And it's back to flip learning. It gives the students something to do in between times. And it's very cheap. The light version is free, actually, and then it costs a fairly small amount to get the full version.
Right. And so the free one has just like one grade on it or something?
I've not checked the free one recently, okay. But it is, it, It is something like that.
Yeah. So you can get a feeling for how it works.
Sure.
And likewise, I downloaded it some time ago when it first came out. And, you know, over in Australia, we've got a number of different exam boards, as you guys do. Although it's marketed at the ABRSM, obviously it's designed for that, there's definitely elements of it which I think are just general great musical questions and things to do, regardless of your exam board anyway. So I'd encourage teachers to download it, just the light version, have a look at it and see what they think. Yeah.
I think it's really intuitive as well. I mean, ABRSM spent a lot of time developing it and a lot of testing, and it's a really solid package. A lot of these apps that for rear training are great, but they sort of limit you slightly, and you have to kind of adjust your what you do in order to satisfy the app and the way the app works. I think what I like about this one is it seems to work the other way. It's what do you want to do, and it supports you. I think it's great. I enjoy it.
Fantastic. Now, another one they've got is Practice Partner. Is that right?
Sorry, I jumped ahead of you there. Yeah, that's one. It's out for piano, and it's just come out for violin. And this is where you can play along with, if you're playing the piano, practicing the piano, you can have it play one hand while you play the other.
This is of pieces in the ABRSM syllabus?
Yes, it's the pieces in the syllabus. Okay. Yeah. So for piano, it's grades 1 to 3 at the moment, I think. And for violin, I think they've got all the grades up to 7 in the violin practice partner. It's for Android as well as all of the speed shifter and practice partner for Android as well as Apple. Right. I think ABRSM might correct me if I'm wrong. I think Oral Trainer is just for Apple at the moment, just for iPhone and iPad.
I think that's right. Yeah.
With practice partner, you can select the tempo. You can select how much of it you want, how much of the piece you want it to play. So you can have it play the whole piece and you play along, or you can have it take a part out and you supply that part. You like speed shifter, you can go at whatever speed you like. You can loop sections of it again to practice. It's certainly very child friendly as well, this one. It's particularly in the low grades, obviously, for violin and piano. It's sort of front end is really funky and sort of colourful and fun. And it will transform practice because it makes it fun. It makes it like a little bit like karaoke. But at the same time, it's wildly educational because it uses recordings that are played really musically and expressively. So it encourages students to be expressive in the way they play and to listen and copy the sort of nuances that they hear on it. Again, it shouldn't replace what they do, but it's certainly really supportive.
Yeah, I like that idea of being able to play along with one hand for students, particularly when they're learning one section one-handed or something. Because, you know, in lessons I'll often do a duet, one-handed duet with my students when they've learned a section with one hand, I'll play the other one. So how good would it be for them to be able to do that at home before the lesson? I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. It's that flip learning thing again. It's anything that makes practice something they want to do rather than have to be asked to do. You know, as teachers, we rely a lot on the parents. With children, we rely a lot on parents having a good routine at home where they find time to do their practice. So wouldn't it be great that they actually want to go and play with this app and do their practice? Because even though they can only play the right hand of Moody Prawn Blues or whatever it might be, the practice partner's providing the rest of it. So it sounds like the real deal before they finish learning it.
Did you just say Moody Prawn Blues?
Yeah.
Is that actually the name of a track?
It's C1 in grade 3 piano.
What a great name. I love it.
It is. It's a great piece as well. It's by one of my examining colleagues, Franklin Gelnick, and it's a really cool piece.
I'm going to look that one up.
I imagine he probably ate a Moody Prawn.
and had a Moody Belly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I like it. All right, and I think there was one other. Melody Writer.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that one?
I've been playing with it a little. It's this is one for the reason that ABRSM did it was for grade 5 theory support for the melody writing question in grade five theory, where you, you have to continue a melody and write a well-constructed melody for an instrument, for a melodic instrument. It's an online resource. It's not an app. And it's great for allowing you to write melodies, which you can either do using the mouse or by hand. So I think you can do it. You can do it on your iPad, for example, with your finger, and or with a stylus. You can work at your own pace, writing little melodies. It gives you feedback. So it sort of says, well, it's really intuitive. It sort of shows you that what you've done is perhaps a little bit too jumpy and you need more stepwise melody in it, or it's not balanced. The first phrase is longer than the second or whatever. So it gives you all kinds of feedback. And it allows you to share your work. So you can sort of comment on each other's melodies through there, through the site as well. And it's free. It's focused on grade five theory, but it's good for general melody writing practice. And I've just started to you might be able to tell, I haven't got to know it as well as the others, but I've just started to use it with some of my students at school as little sort of homework assignments. The reaction is pretty positive at the moment. They enjoy it. They like the way that it will play the melody that you've written, and you can hear it, and you get some feedback on it, and you learn how to tweak it to make it better. Yeah. One of the hard things about melody writing is you can tell by listening that it's not quite right what you've written, but you may not quite know what to do to fix it. So it gives you that feedback's really valuable that it gives you.
Or in the exam, I assume if it's like the exams here, you can't play it anyway. You can only hear it in your head. So that's I guess it's helping students make that connection between what they're writing and how it sounds, so that hopefully in the exam they can start to hear it orally in their head.
Yeah, that connection's crucial, isn't it? And very difficult to get.
It's very difficult.
I think a lot of students do that question in a kind of methodical way of just looking at the notes on the page and don't actually think about what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So to have it played back to you is really valuable.
Fantastic. Wow. That has been so good. I've really enjoyed hearing some of these new apps, and I'm going to go and start exploring some of them myself now. So I think we'll wrap it up, because we've been going, I think it's about 45 minutes or so, which is just brilliant. Can I ask you just two very quick final questions? What's one piece of technology that you couldn't do without today in your music teaching role?
Probably my iPad. I was sort of between the iPad and computer. I think just because it's so portable, particularly things like Fourscore and having music at your fingertips. It's functional. You can use it anywhere. You can sort of grade work on the train, it's not as cumbersome as having a laptop. Plus, the battery life of a tablet is way better than a laptop, so I think that's a big thing. And it's very flexible as well. So I have an iPad, but I'd say a tablet is probably, if you're going to spend some money on technology, I'd say get a tablet rather than a laptop or a smartphone.
Brilliant. All right, and the last one, you know, we've been talking about flipping this and composing that and recording and apps. For teachers who are just getting started, we mentioned at the start of the show, what's your kind of just first couple of steps for a teacher that's really inspired by this episode and like, yep, I want to try this out. What do you think they should do, apart from perhaps getting an iPad, as we've just mentioned?
Well, I wouldn't do that, because that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think the first thing to do is to make sure that if you get an iPad or whatever you're going to get, that it's going to be really worth the money you invest in it, because these things aren't cheap. I would say start by downloading some free light versions of apps on your computer and play with them. Or use your, if you have a lot of our viewers will have smartphones, so try something on the phone first of all. It's the best way to start. I think probably the first ones would be to go to try out the ABRSM apps, to try out Fourscore. There's a sight reading app that I forgot to mention earlier, which would be in my top five, which is probably now a top six, which is the Wesser sight reading app. Have you heard of that?
WEWS. Yeah, it's the one that covers bars up, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And it encourages you to look ahead, yeah.
Yeah.
I play about with those. And if you're not sure how to use something, try and find out by going to YouTube and typing in "how do I use this?" Because usually there's someone that's put a video up showing you how to use one. You know, it's like when something goes wrong in your house, you know, and you don't know how to fix it. Sometimes before you call out someone, the best thing to do is to get online and see if there's an answer there.
100%,
and for music, that's really true as well. Mm. And I think I would say just you can't break the internet. You can't break apps. So play with them. I've not had a single lesson in technology. I've got to become comfortable with it because I've played with it, and it's been something that I've done in my downtime, and I certainly don't spend hours doing it. Mm. I haven't got time to spend hours doing it. I have a kind of rule of thumb that if I can't work out the basics of how to work something in 2 or 3 minutes, then it's probably not for me, so I won't use it. So those apps, the top apps are the ones that are intuitive and user-friendly, and you just go, oh, yeah, that just makes perfect sense, and you're in, and you're using it before you know it.
Yep.
So, yeah, absolutely. Play with stuff and don't spend too much money. There's no need to until you're sure of what you want.
Yep. Great advice, Simon. Thank you so much for all of that. Is there anything that we've missed that you wanted to mention that I haven't asked you about?
I don't think so. No, I've had a lot to say, so I've probably covered everything. It's great to have had the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm sure that listeners will be like, yes, this has been we've such a great content filled episode. It's been really, really, really good talking to you. So thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. Actually, I didn't before we started, but now that I've heard what you said at the start, I can't believe you've had the time. I really appreciate it.
It sounds busy when you read it all out to someone like that, but yeah, I don't feel particularly busy. It sounds really cheesy, but I love music, and I love being busy in music. So it's all very pleasurable for me. And teaching music is just one of the most empowering things to do. I think it's something that just it's great to see it affect people in such a positive way. Mm. And in our country at the moment, you know, when music education isn't at the forefront, isn't on the top of the political agenda. So, you know, we're kind of flying the flag here. I think it's so important that kids learn this stuff and learn these skills.
Mm. And I think it's good to remind ourselves of, you know, what a privileged position we're in. You know, sometimes it's so easy to get bogged down day to day and students not making much progress or not doing their practice and that, those kind of things. But you look at it and go, wow, what an amazing job we get to do on a day-to-day basis. It's pretty special.
Absolutely. A student wrote to me once when I was leaving a school, and it's a letter I kept, and she wrote on it, the most inspiring thing about being taught by you is seeing how inspired you are by what you do. And so long as we go on loving what we do and loving music, then we'll be inspiring. You don't have to try to be inspiring. It'll just come out.
Yeah. Wow. But I'm not going to say anything else. That is a brilliant ending. Thank you so much.